This is now the sixth sermon I've given on marriage since the beginning of spring. And there's yet one to come. Seven is a good number, so I thought I'd give seven. The next one will have to do with communications in marriage, and I'll give that when I get back. So there'll be the seven, and I hope they're helping. I really do. You know, sometimes a minister thinks like Paul. You know, Paul's talked about the foolishness of preaching. And I guess he was joking a little bit about how you can stand and you can preach and you can tell people the right way to go. But yet sometimes it's just like, you know, air in the wind, just like a puff of smoke that is sent up. The wind currents come along and carries it away. In other words, it sort of goes in one end or one ear and out the other. Freudian slip. But I hope your marriage isn't that messy. But some cases it is. And I just hope, and I know that the fruit of the labor of these sermons is going to be in your marriages, as to whether or not your marriage and your family is any better and any stronger as a result. In the last two sermons, though, I have talked about love. Love as it applies to marriage. In the first sermon, we looked at agape love, and I told you that that was a willful mental commitment to give to your imperfect mate, to love them without expecting love in return. And then we talked about, in the series of five loves, we talked about the love of friendship in the last sermon. We combined storge love and filio love, the two loves of friendship, and we talked about how that lovers ought to really be best friends, and that your mate ought to be the best friend you have in the world. But you know, God has blessed and enriched this joyous union of marriage so deeply with all of these facets of love that there is yet more to come. And I have looked at it now as in three phases. The willful commitment to give, that's phase one. Phase two, a friendship. And now we're going to talk about phase three, and we're going to talk about two loves today. Because the third phase of love can only be fully enjoyed in the foundation and upon the context of the first two. And the kind of love that I'm going to talk about today has to do with what I call the dessert of marriage. The dessert of marriage. Now, young people like to get the dessert, even when they're real little, before the dinner. You know, if you've got a pie out there, they want to dig into the pie and they want to skip the meat and potatoes and the spinach. But you know, that doesn't make for a healthy body or system. Kids won't last that long eating dessert first. Bad teeth and everything else. Well, I think that is really a diagnosis of what has happened in American marriages. Before people are married, they imbibe in the dessert. And then when it comes around to eat the spinach after they're married, they don't want to fool with it. But you see, the meat and the potatoes of marriage must come first. That's why in the organization of these sermons, I talked about this commitment to give, first of all. Then I talked about friendship. And then today, now I'm going to talk about the dessert of marriage. So let's look at the phase of love that I call the pleasure phase. The pleasure phase of marriage. Because I think God intended marriage to be the most pleasurable experience known and possible to man. We've dealt with the mind. We've dealt with emotions. Now it's time to put the emotions together with the eyes, because the kind of love I'm talking about today is emotional, and it is also highly visual. Highly visual. And the first love of the pleasure phase that I'm going to talk about, the Greeks called eros, E-R-O-S. And it is the love of romance. It is the passionate love. It is a love that is sentimental. And a love that is euphoric is the kind of love that sort of changes your marriage. Let's compare it to color, to black and white TV, to color TV. From black and white to living technicolor. It adds the spice and the excitement and the exuberance to marriage. It's the kind of love, eros is, that people write poems about. It is the kind of love that songs are written about. But it is not sex. I want to make that distinction right now. It is not sex. You might have thought, oh yeah, that's eros love. That's sex. No, there is a difference. And you women know the difference, don't you? Between romance and sex. Sometimes us men sort of blend them together. I haven't gotten into that phase yet. I am talking about eros, which is passionate love, romantic love. It has to do with the emotion. It has nothing to do with the physical, in a sense, as far as touching sexually, although it leads to that. You see, all of these lead up, all of these five loves. See, sex is the capstone of love, but it has to be shored up and have a sure foundation, first of all, with that commitment to give and that friendship, and then romance. It is a difference, because we're going to deal with sex as a separate kind of love. Eros is the love that should put your marriage on cloud nine. Now, I don't know where your marriage is, and you think about it. On a scale of 1 to 9, where is it romantically? Would you say it's a 9? Are you on cloud 9? Is it on cloud 3, or is it on 1? Well, in many cases, it may just be on 1, but it doesn't have to stay that way, because God wants your marriage to be very exciting. I'd like to read a quote to you from a book entitled Fascinating Girl. I wouldn't recommend you necessarily buy it. It has some good things in it and some that aren't. But the author, Helen Anlin, she says this about Eros and how a man or a woman, but she uses a man, how he feels in describing this kind of love. When a man loves with all of his heart, he experiences an intensely thrilling sensation. It has been described as a feeling almost like pain. You ever felt like that? Maybe some years ago when you first met your mate. I mean, you were so madly in love, it just hurt. Had a pain in your heart. He feels exuberant and light, like walking in the clouds. At times, he feels fascinated and enchanted with a girl. Along with all of these thrilling and consuming sensations, there's a tenderness, a desire to protect and shelter his woman from all harm, danger, and difficulty. That's describing how, when a man is in love, he feels. That's describing how you really ought to be feeling now, not just at the point when you see that future mate, when you're trying to win her, but even now that ought to be, because that is what gives marriage the excitement and the joy that ought to be there to an otherwise dull relationship. God didn't intend it just to be dull. He just didn't. He intended it to go on being happy, to be enjoyable. And we must, again, fall in love. Now, when I made that statement, some of you might have said, now, wait a minute, where is this guy coming from? It wasn't but a few weeks ago when he was talking about infatuation and how that's not true love. And he was talking about agape love, that willful commitment to give to the other person regardless how they are. Am I contradicting myself? No, I am not talking about infatuation. I am talking about romance that has as its foundation agape, to give. And in the process of giving, this love produces an awful lot of joy and an awful lot of excitement. Romance, I'm here to tell you, is not just a production of Hollywood. And if you think it is, you've been psyched out by the master psyker. And that's Satan the devil. It is not just a production of Hollywood. Now, we have used that terminology before. But in marriage, that is not the case. Eros is real and it is alive and it is needful in your marriage and it does exist. You see, Satan knows how to do it. He knows how to get us to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We see all of how the world looks at this kind of love I'm talking about, and then we are psyched out in our minds to begin to look down on it, to neglect it. And therefore, we're not as happy as we ought to be in our marriages. And we've neglected, too many of us, this kind of love in our marriages too long. And I know some of you women want to say amen right now, but just say it in your mind. Really? Now, husbands, you don't look at it that way, but your wives do, and they really need it. You see, romance is even biblical. I'll just back it up with the Bible. It is biblical. It is not just worldly kind of love. It is biblical. What do you think the Song of Solomon is about? God devoted a whole book in His Word to romance, to sentimental things, to passion, to euphoria. What do you think I'm talking about? Escapism? No, I'm talking about realism, because it's real. And God Almighty has created mankind with the capacity, or shall I say, along with that, the potentiality to feel passion. Do you know God feels passion? He feels it deeply for His church. You know what makes God feel good when He sees the church doing right? It gives Him a sort of high, a euphoria, like He's in love. That's the underlying basis of the Song of Solomon. And God in marriage is giving us the opportunity to learn how to feel. We have been, I won't use that term, well, I'll say it, men. We have been emotionally, passionately, and romantically castrated. We just have. In our ability to feel tenderly. Now, that's a strong term, but I mean it that way. I started out to use it and hope nobody blushes. But I use that strong term to get the point across to you. That we don't know how to feel passionately towards our wives. And God has given us the opportunity in marriage to learn that. Let's look at another example of this kind of love. So you'll know that I'm not fooling you, that God recognizes it and God wants it. And it's something you ought to have, that you ought to be on cloud nine, both wives and husbands, toward one another. Let's look at Genesis. I want to talk a little bit about Jacob. Jacob was a dude, as they say, who was in love. He was sick with love. He was tore up. And it was visual. It was physical. And it was exciting. And that is not wrong. Let's look at now in the book of Genesis. I want to show you how much in love this character was. I don't think, well, maybe you have, and we ought to be as much in love with our wives. And this was before he married her. Genesis 29. Genesis 29 and verse 9. Here he went back to his mother's country. He was looking for a wife. And I'm going to make a statement. This was sort of like the beginning of love. I won't use the term love at first sight, but I guess for lack of a better thing, it was. In Genesis 29, verse 9, here he was standing talking to somebody, and while he yet spake with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the rock from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. I mean, he was excited. He said, wow, let me go try to impress her. He went over there, probably didn't know how heavy the rock was, Superman number, you know, move that rascal, you know. He didn't maybe realize how heavy it was. Love can do that to you. You know, you've heard of people in distressed situations, how they pick up cars off little children. Well, he was so impressed by her that he just moved this stone like he was just picking up a feather. Okay, goes on. And Jacob kissed Rachel. Now, it wasn't a sensuous kiss because they weren't married. Maybe just a greeting, as the custom was at that day. The Bible talks about a holy kiss. So right now it was kind of holy, but he was leaning toward the romantic side of that holy one. And Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and he wept. I mean, he was so overwhelmed. Remember I read that quote, how it's like a pain? This woman described when a man is in love, it's like a pain. Well, he felt this pain. He felt this sensation. He wept. And he lifted up his voice. I mean, he was happy, joyfully, like the woman who was in the tornado, you know. She was crying for joy. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother and that he was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father, boy, this man's crazy. You know, look at him. He really likes me. Now, let's go over to verse 20. Let me show you how much in love he was. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. Now, this is just not infatuation. This is romantic love with the undergirding of agape to give, because he was willing to give 7 years for Rachel. Now, get this. Get how much enthralled and in love he was with her. And they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. Now, to work 7 hard years, and it only seemed like a few days, something's got to be happening in your head, right? I mean, you've got to be strung out. You've got to be in love. You've got to be impassioned. And certainly Jacob was in love, the Eros kind of love, and impassioned for Rachel, to where he was so much on cloud nine that he was able to pass those 7 years as if they were a few days. As I said, God has created the capacity for us to feel that way. God put these emotions in us. It is how we use them. And it's how we develop them. And the greatest area and the greatest opportunity is for us to develop them in marriage. So I want to cover quickly three factors, three things that help you instill and imbue your marriage with this kind of passion that I know your wives desperately want to see, and I know husbands desperately want to see it as well in your marriage. It is not just to be a boring kind of relationship. It is to be the most pleasurable experience man can experience. There are three factors. The first one is called surrender. At least that's what I'm going to call it. The second one is imagination, like the song. And the third is providing the right emotional climate. Three simple ones, and we're going to see how you can use them in your marriage. First, let's look at surrender. And I do mean that. That you must determine in your mind to surrender yourself. In other words, to open up yourself so that love can flow. You know, think of the relationship between your wife and you and your minds and your hearts as a circuit. You're joined together as one. But there may be a circuit breaker there. Now that circuit breaker could have been, that resistor could have been planted there by past problems. It could be there as a result of ignorance, of not knowing how to act and how to love. It could be there because of past hurts. It could be there for any reason. But if this kind of love, Eros, is highly emotional and it is highly sensitive, the most sensitive love of all of them, they can be, it can be turned on or off very, very easily. And you've got to first surrender, that is, remove all resistance between you and your mate. Yes, open yourself up, yes, even for the possibility of being hurt again. That just comes with the turf. Because it is such an emotional love. You've got to forgive, as I said several sermons ago, and you've got to forget the past. And you've got to be receptive to this love. And whatever that mental block is, you pray and ask God to help remove it so that you can open up. You've got to remove all roadblocks that inhibit your feelings for your mate and vice versa. You sort of got to, as I say, let go and let the love flow. Just got to do that and take a chance on love, as the song says. You really do. You've got to take a chance with your mate. But who else should you take that chance with? Who else should you forgive and open up to and let it flow? The second thing I want to talk about is imagination. Because I feel the human mind, in regards to imagination and creativity, and the facet of creativity and imagination, is one of the strongest powers that God has given mankind. I won't turn there, but in Genesis 11:6, what did it say at the Tower of Babel? What did God say about the strength of the imagination and the power of the imagination of mankind? It said, God said, nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. And when you look at mankind, even in the last 100 years, the inventions, the progress that man has been able to accomplish through his imagination and will, you can see what God means. Now, man can't do everything and anything that God can. But God has given man part of his own creative powers and even the power of imagination. And you have that power. And I say we can let that power work for good in your own marriage. I talked about this Eros love being very emotional, very sensitive. And it has to do with feelings. It has to do with the visual concepts, which we'll talk about a little later. But use your imagination. You see, imagination reinforces and strengthens the emotions. And since this Eros love, has to do with the way you feel about your mate, your imagination can influence that very heavily. Because your imagination reinforces your emotions. Let's compare it to pictures in a book. You know, pictures in a book, they increase the impact they illustrate what the book is trying to say. That's why we like movies and television, because we like to see. Well, imagine your imagination like a big TV screen or a big movie screen upon which you can flash any picture you want, any concept of mind. You can visualize negative things about your mate. In your imagination, you can visualize positive things about your mate. And the way you see it is going to influence the way you feel about your mate. It's either going to speed up those positive feelings of passion and romance, or it's going to kill it. One lady wrote a book on dealing with divorce entitled How to Fall Out of Love with Your Mate. And she described in that book, if you want to really break off this relationship and fall out of love with that mate and completely forget it, she had some steps, and it had to do with imagination. She said to picture your mate in the most negative circumstances possible. Look for every criticism, every negative thing about that person, and just dwell on the negative. Just picture him always in a negative light, and soon that love will die. Well, I think that same principle can be applied in a positive way if we use our imagination. And I don't think that's wrong. Select, and I'm telling you to try this. I'm asking you, I'm begging you. Select a pleasurable, romantic, positive, passionate, joyful experience from your past with your mate. If you have to go all the way back and you were dating, if it's been that long, 30, 20 years since you felt that way. From the past, maybe from the present, or maybe in the future, is how you would like your mate to be and react, or some hoped-for experience that is romantic and pleasurable. And think about it. As you're driving along, as you're relaxing, as you're at work. No, not at work. Lala, put a drill through your hand. But when you have the time to daydream, now I'm talking about using daydreaming in a positive fashion. Think about those experiences. Think about your mate in a positive way. I'm talking about fantasy. That's right, fantasy. Now, fantasy in the world has been used in negative ways. And people, and I know some of you have too, if you say you haven't, you're lying. You have probably fantasized about things that are wrong. I know I have. But fantasy and imagination can be used in a positive way. Fantasize about your mate. You ever do that? When was the last time you fantasized about your mate? Not about what you've seen on a cover of a Playboy magazine. Not about your neighbor's wife. But about your wife or about your husband. When was the last time you fantasized about them? And fantasy has a great, I'll talk about that in a Bible study, but a great deal to do with sexual satisfaction. People in the world use it negatively. But you can use that as a power to even increase the level of enjoyment of your sex life. And you can use it to increase the level and the energy of your romantic life of Eros. When was the last time you fantasized in a romantic way about your mate? Now, women tend to like to fantasize about romance, about their husbands or about somebody being romantic to them, whispering sweet nothings in their ear, sending them flowers and cards and all that kind of thing. But us men, we like to fantasize about sex. That's why you have all these Playboy magazines and whatever else they're called, Q and whatever they are today. See, men are built differently. They like to fantasize about sex, but women like to fantasize about romance. Why do you think they have all of these daytime TV shows for women? And all these romantic triangles and situations, because women like to fantasize that way. Use it, women, not to look at Days of Our Lives or As the World Turns or all these old soap operas. But once you fantasize about your man, about your husband, it will increase the way you feel about them. It will make you more receptive to his advances. I want to go to Philippians and back it up with Scripture. I think you know what I'm going to talk about. I don't have time. I'm running out of time. We may go way over today. But in Philippians 4, you don't have to turn now, I'll just read it. In verse 8, it says, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true. You know, look at your husband, look at your mate, look at things that are positive about them. Be detailed in your fantasy. Flash that picture there in living color, 3D, any way you want it. Fantasize about your mate's eyes. When was the last time you thought about your mate's eyes? When was the last time you thought about and fantasized about your mate's smile? That's one thing that I like about my wife. I love her smile. And sometimes when I'm away from her, I think about that smile. And that just turns me on towards her. It'll happen for you too. Fantasize about your mate's figure. Fantasize about the strength of your husband. Fantasize about the way you like to be held by one another. That's not wrong. Whatever things are true, whatever things are honest, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, anything good, look for it. And if there be any praise, think on these things. And it'll increase the way you feel about your mate romantically. Boy, it'll turn you men on, and women too, towards your mate. And that's where your heart needs to be turned to. And you need to think about that. And anticipate how it's going to be in the future with you and your mate. And I tell you, if both of you are doing that, it's going to bring you closer together. It's going to reinforce your feelings. It's going to turn them on. Christ said, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. If you don't think that way, you're not going to be that way. And as I said, it is not wrong to fantasize about your mate in a positive way. Your imagination will feed your thoughts, and your thoughts will intensify your feelings of love, and your feelings will motivate your actions and your mood and your attitude in the way of romance. Now, while you're doing all this mental work, you need to do a third thing. After you've surrendered, you're letting the love flow, and you're building it up in your mind, because it is in the mind. It is in the mind. Then you need to provide your mate with the proper climate in which these seeds of love that you're planting in your own mind and her mind can grow. You need to provide a fertile emotional climate in which love can grow. That's the third thing you do in developing this Eros love. There are many other things, but I just chose these three. Atmosphere is very, very important. How many of you took advantage of that beautiful moon last night? How many? Let me see the hands. Wasn't it beautiful? My wife and I, we went out and just sat on the front end of the car and looked up at the moon and the stars. It was a beautiful night. That's what I'm talking about providing the right atmosphere. You know, when was the last time you had a candlelight dinner? Just you and your mate. Put the kids to bed, got them cleaned up, and just you and your wife with wine and the song. Just had a nice evening. Whether it's candlelight or the lights dim, soft romantic music in the background, walks in the moonlight like last night, walks at night along the water. Some of you live near the water. I'm sure you've done that. You know, picnics in the park for just you two. This is what I'm talking about. You've got to have the right climate. You've got to have the right soil for all these seeds you're sowing so that it can grow. So you have to provide. And you have to work on this, husbands and wives. You have to make these opportunities. And then touching. I want to hit that again, touching. I talked about that last time. How many of you have been touching more regularly since that last sermon? Let me see the hands. Good, a few. It's doing some good, I guess, one or two. So therefore, I need to mention it again. Touching. Touching also produces this aura, this climate to show affection through caresses and love pats and kisses. I'll tell you what, here's a prescription. I'll write it out for you right quick. Now get this prescription filled and use it. Make it a habit that every time you see one another, I don't care, husbands, if your wife's in the kitchen and you're passing from the dining room into the garage to the kitchen and you see her there washing dishes, touch her. I don't care if you're leaving for work, touch, kiss. Every time you pass one another, make it a habit to touch. Please, for your own sake. As I talked about how touching breaks down barriers and brings you closer together, make it a habit. My wife and I have done that. And just about, I don't know, we must touch 100 times a day. That's why you never can get me on the phone. See?
But touch, make it a habit. We've done that. And we haven't always, we've touched, but we've tried that. And it's become a habit. Just every time we see one another, it's just automatic. It'll be mechanical, yes, to begin with. But after a while, it'll blend. And you just do it naturally. You'll touch. And that'll bring you a lot closer together. I really mean that. And then I talked about last time, and I tell you this, it's a positive benefit for your kids. When the kids see mommy and daddy hugging and touching and kissing, it really makes them feel good inside. It really does. It gives them a sense of security. It sends a message. This is the message it sends. It sends a message that, hey, everything's all right between mom and dad. That they're close. And it makes them feel very, very secure in the home environment. So remember that. What about eye contact? Are you looking at each other anymore? That creates this romantic thing. You know the song, "I Only Have Eyes for You"? You perhaps sing about that when you're dating. You couldn't keep your eyes off her, just like Jacob couldn't keep his eyes off of Rachel when he saw her. What about now? Just the glances. You know, when was the last time you just looked into your mate's eyes? You perhaps sing about that when you're dating. You couldn't keep your eyes off her, just like Jacob couldn't keep his eyes off of Rachel when he saw her. What about now? Just the glances. You know, when was the last time you just looked into your mate's eyes and said nothing? And said nothing. You know, that's just, it's a way to look at your mate. You can send all kinds of signals, from anger to love to later on. So all kinds of signals. When was the last time you just looked at your mate across a crowded room, at a dance, you're talking to somebody else and you look across and just look at them. Maybe if they're not even looking at you, but you just look at them. That really inspires you, and maybe they'll catch you looking at them. And nothing more can arouse feelings of romance and passion in your partner than through eye contact. Another thing that will help the seeds grow, that will fertilize the soil, is grooming. Grooming. You remember when you were first dating how you had to be sharp? You know, you kept them waiting in the car 30 minutes so you could get your hair together. Remember that? But now you don't care how you appear before him. You know, all in rollers or needing to be in rollers. You just don't care anymore. Husband's old, greasy, sloppy, needing to shave, and then you want her to kiss you. Huh? Doesn't work. You know, try to be as attractive as possible to one another. Just because you're at home and nobody else is around, your mate's around. You ought to look at the situation. You see, you ought to look at this thing. It's not that I've got you. That's what we do. And you do have each other. You should be committed to one another. But you should live in this aura of romance like you're still trying to win one another. Like you're still trying to impress. Don't let familiarity kill it. It will kill it. As sure as anything. Be clean and well-dressed. Your hair and your teeth. And, you know, brush your teeth before you kiss your wife or whatever. You know, try to impress them and be as neat and as well-groomed as possible. Use the perfume or the aftershave or the cologne. You know, use that. And be a lover. You have to work at it. And then be a creative lover in creating the right atmosphere. I heard a song the other day. I wish I would have caught the singer or the title of it, but he was talking about 100 ways to love your lover. Anybody heard that recently? It was on WLBS. I don't know who's singing that, but it is beautiful. I really was impressed with that song. You know, a few years ago, Paul Simon was talking about 50 ways to leave your lover, you know, get out the back, Jack, and all that, you know. But this was positive. This was positive. He was talking about 100 ways to love your lover. And be a creative lover. Boredom, monotony can really kill Eros. See, Eros is very, very sensitive. And you have to be very, very aware of it. Be creative. You know, writing poems and letters to your mate. You know, as the old songs used to say, you know, love letters straight from your heart, you know. Write with feeling. Send the flowers, the one or the two, and the notes left under the pillow. The appreciation that you really appreciate one another. Be creative in these things. The calls that you may make to your wife or your husband from work to just let you know, hey, look, I'm just thinking about you and I love you. Be creative. I don't have the time. My time's running out. I have yet to get to the other love today. So I don't have time to dwell on it. But that's very important. Be a creative lover. Don't just do the same thing over and over again. Think about it. I know it takes work. And I want you to remember always that in romantic love, with every act, with every deed, with every glance, with every word, you are sending messages to your mate. Those messages can be positive or they can be negative. Again, Eros is the most sensitive of all loves. It can be as quickly as it can be aroused. That quickly also, it can be killed. So realize you're always sending out vibes to your mate about romance. And remember, the purpose of it is that God wants us to develop the aspect of His character of how to feel passionately about things, of how to love deeply. Now, I must hurry on to the other love in the pleasure phase of the five loves, and that one the Greeks call epithumia, epithumia. And it simply means strong desire. Strong desire. And it's talking about sexual love. Now, today I will not go through in detail. There are many aspects that I'll talk about in a moment about this kind of love. I will not go through it all here. I think there are certain things that must be handled discreetly and privately where children are not there. But we'll talk about that in a moment. I think God has created in all of us a strong desire. Sex is beyond a doubt the strongest desire in man. God put it there for two reasons, I feel. Number one, for character development. For character development. Self-control has got to be exercised before you're married and even afterwards, as far as others are concerned. And learning to be good stewards of this powerful and dynamic gift. The second reason I think that God has put this drive in us is because it gives us the opportunity for the highest level of human expression and pleasure. The highest level of human expression and pleasure is sex in the context of marriage. And it ought to be looked at as an art that must be continually worked with and developed in its use. It is not something that everybody automatically knows how to use. It is like an artist who must constantly practice, who must constantly work on it. It is an art. Being a good lover sexually is an art. And there's a lot of bad art around. It really is. And you can make some good art. And Satan has done a number on us. And I hope you will go back and reread Mr. Armstrong's book on the missing dimension in sex. Everybody's got that, don't they? Right? Okay, married couples, you're assigned to read that before our Bible studies begin. You're assigned to read that. Satan has attacked and perverted successfully this great gift from God. He's done a number from the Victorian angle where, you know, sex is, you know, not something you talk about, let alone something you do. And I'm sure that there are people sitting here today, and I don't mean to be on your case or anything, that may feel uncomfortable about me talking about this subject. But God is not uncomfortable about it. God made it, and it's beautiful. And He's done a number from the left side, where today everybody's liberated sexually, where you do it how you want to and when you want to and with whom you want to. And that's wrong too. And in both counts, he strikes mankind out in that way. And many of us still suffer the effects from whatever angle of Satan's deception. And our marriages aren't as happy as they should be and can be. I'm going to make an important statement. I want you to take note of it. Your sexual relationship will always mirror the larger context of your life. Your sexual relationship will always mirror the larger context of your life. What I mean by that, in other words, that the success of your sexual life and relationship with your mate will depend on how well you are getting along in other areas of your marriage. If you are having problems in your marriage, it will show up first in your sex life. If you don't believe me, you think about it in your past and in your future. This is why I put this love of the five last. Because if the other five loves aren't there and aren't right, sex will be meaningless. But if they are right, it's just like a beautiful capstone built upon the foundation of agape and all these other loves, and you put sex right at the top. But if those other loves and other things aren't right, it's going to fall down. It's not going to work. It is not going to be fulfilling. You need to understand that. There are three areas that we need to cover. One is a biblical view of sex, which we will do in a moment. Secondly, is that we need complete and accurate medical knowledge, which we'll do in Bible study. And thirdly, the right approach or technique to use in sex and marriage. And that must also be handled privately in a Bible study. So let's get to, you know, there are many things we're going to cover in there. We're going to cover the four stages of intercourse, which is desire, excitement, orgasm, and resolution. We're going to cover pre-foreplay as well as foreplay and all those things that are needful. Because really, you might think, well, hey, we're married. We don't need that. I tell you, you'll be surprised with what you might learn. Now, let's cover the biblical approach today and leave the other two for Bible studies. Okay, God, I want to make the statement, said it was good. God was not embarrassed to mention it. God was not ashamed of it. God said it was good. In Genesis, the first chapter, in verse 27, it says that God created them male and female. I'm going to go fast, so you might just listen to me read the scriptures because I'm going to be humming through them. God created man in his own image, it says, and God created he him, male and female, created he them. He created the different sexes. And as the French say, vive la différence. You know, hooray that we are different. And in verse 31, God saw that everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good, even sex. But in your mind right now, you may feel uncomfortable about it. You may have question marks about it. You may have frustrations because of your marital situation with it. But when God made it, he said, boy, this is great. This is very, very good. There was no shame involved. God intended it to be pleasurable. Let's look at Genesis 2, verse 23. I want to read something I read before several weeks ago. It says here, and Adam said, this is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. And in the Hebrew, this is now is rendered, wow, as I mentioned to you. Adam was excited. He said, wow, this is for me? And Eve probably said the same thing. And they weren't ashamed. They were happy. They were joyful. Adam was ecstatic. He just didn't say it. Now, this is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. You know, that was not his approach. I mean, he just wasn't all cool and collect and very analytical about it and, you know, what's this and that, you know. He was excited. And God looked at that and smiled on it. And he said it was good. It goes on in verse 24. Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and cling to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And that literally means intercourse. God put it there. I didn't. In verse 25, and they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. They simply were not ashamed. Are you ashamed of your body? You shouldn't be. God made it. He made it beautiful. Naked and not ashamed. Satan, though, came around the corner and convince them, as I could take you some scriptures and show you later, that it was something to be shameful about. that it was something that was not good. God created sex, brethren. And he created us in his own image. And he got the idea from himself. Do you realize that in marriage, when a man and a woman has orgasm, that expression is just a little bit, a fraction of the joy, of the sensation that God Almighty feels when his love is poured out? We're only experiencing what God experiences. God enjoys pleasure. Is it in Psalm 19? Don't quote me on that, but it's somewhere in the low range of the Psalms where David expressed Christ's feelings. He said, you know, he was thinking about returning to the throne of God, Jesus Christ was. And he says, at your throne there are joys and there are pleasures forevermore. It is the highest human expression. Sex is beautiful in marriage. Let's look at that in Hebrews 13. You notice I said marriage, not before, in any way, manner, shape, or form. I don't care if it's holding hands or arm around. It shouldn't be done, young people. You say, oh, ain't nothing wrong with holding hands. Why can't I hold hands? That's what I call pre. I was going to say floor play. Foreplay. Really. One thing leads to another. And if you're not married, leave hands off. But anyway, if you are married, put them on. You see, he's just so backwards in the society. Before we get married, just hands everywhere. And then once we get married, tie them behind our back and walk around the house all day. Uh-uh. God intended to be that way. Let's go to Hebrews. Hebrews 13:4. God inspired Paul to write, marriage is honorable. Honorable. In all. And the bed undefiled. And the term bed in Greek is the word coitus. It is the same Greek word for intercourse that we use today. Undefiled. But whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. That is, outside of marriage. But in marriage, it is honorable, undefiled. 1 Corinthians 7, little baby over there out preaching me. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 3. Don't worry, I don't make you feel uncomfortable, whoever the parent is. I'm just kidding. I know kids are like that. No problem. 1 Corinthians 7, and in verse 3. Now, this is very interesting because God gives us three principles that we can only cover briefly here. In verse 3, it gives us the principle in marriage and sex, the principle of need. The principle of need. Now, let the husband render unto the wife her due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto her husband. It shows the principle of need in marriage. God commands, he does not suggest, but he commands that we satisfy one another's needs, that we gratify one another. Now, usually the wife has no problem doing that for the husband, but the problem generally comes in for the man and for the wife. And Paul, therefore, puts the man first. And in fact, in the Greek, it says it is his duty to do that. The man's duty. And also the wives. Husbands are commanded to satisfy their wives sexually. Sex is not just for the man's enjoyment. Although it all, not always, well, a lot of times works out that way for some couples. And it shouldn't. And I think these Bible studies are going to help. You know, in some countries, they're so perverted that they circumcise the women. Do you realize that? That they circumcise the women so that they cannot receive any sexual gratification. Just show you how perverted some cultures are sexually. But God commanded not only that the husband receive gratification, but also the wife. And you have a duty, men, to do that. It is your duty, it is your responsibility. The third principle that Paul points out here after the principle of need gratification is in verse 4. And that is the principle of authority. And you need to realize this, young people, before you get married, this principle of authority. You may not have understood this, but you'll see it now. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband has the power over the wife's body. And likewise, also, the husband doesn't have power over his body, but the wife. At the time of marriage, you relinquish the authority over your body. Wives, your body belongs to your husband, and husbands, your body belongs to your wife. You have no right, no authority whatsoever to withhold sex from your mate. And that's a damnable thing. Also, with that relinquishing of authority comes a responsibility. You also have the responsibility to care for your mate's body as if it were your own, which brings a responsibility not to misuse your mate's body. Although you have power over your mate's body, you have responsibility with that power to care for it just like it was your own. And not do anything to it that you wouldn't want done to your own. The second principle that Paul brings out here in verse 5 is the principle of habit. Of habit. Defraud ye not one another, except it be with consent for a time. That, in other words, don't withhold sex from one another. Make it a habit. Unless it is for a time upon mutual agreement, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer. Notice that's about the only thing he gives, and I'm sure sickness as well. But fasting and prayer, that's the only reason, and that must be at that by mutual consent. And come together again, that Satan tempt you not with your inconsistency. In other words, so that your mind is not out here wandering after other women and after other men, because things aren't not able to be consummated at home. So there's the principle of habit. Again, don't withhold sex. Many, many women find that be their only weapon to get to you, then they withhold. And that is wrong. That is a sin. And that should never be done by a Christian, let alone, you know, neither anybody in the world who is not a Christian. Paul is very clear about that. Must not use that as a weapon. Now, I need to cut some things out here, and we'll save for the Bible study. Sexual love, brethren, though, is a capstone, as I said, of all the loves. I want to go now to Proverbs and just read a couple of scriptures here in that regards that Solomon talked about, and then we'll have the song and the closing prayer and then the film. In Proverbs 5, he commands both men and women to take this approach towards their mates as far as sex is concerned. He says in verse 15 of chapter 5, drink waters out of your own cistern. In other words, he's saying, you only have relations with your own mate. Drink waters out of your own cistern and running waters out of your own well. Don't fool around. That ought to be obvious to most Christians, but it's just a reminder. Let your fountains be dispersed abroad, and the rivers of waters in the streets. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't go out in the street and, you know, fool around. Verse 17, let them be only your own, and not strangers with you. As people get involved in all kind of triangles and all that kind of stuff, there's nothing new under the sun. That was going on in Solomon's day. Let your fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of your youth, the woman that you originally married. Be in love with her. And he says, let her be as a loving hind and a pleasant roe. Let her breast satisfy you at all times. At all times. Even when you're away from her, think about her in detail. There's no such thing as X-rated in marriage. Your thoughts don't have to be censored with your wife. It says, let her breast satisfy you at all times, and be ravished. Ravished also with her love. Be in love with her and with one another. Because God wants you to learn something from that. In Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 5, right after Proverbs. In fact, I'm going to read in verse 9 for time's sake. Ecclesiastes 9:9 says, live joyfully. Live joyfully with the wife that you love.
and should increase that love and look at love as an ever-growing thing that must be worked on and dunged and pruned and fed all the days of the life of your vanity which God has given you under His Son. All the days of your vanity, for this is your portion in this life. Physically, there is nothing more important than the relationship between you and your wife. Spiritually, there's nothing more important than the relationship between you and God. But physically, there is nothing, your job, even your children, that is more important than the relationship you have with your wife. For this is your portion. This is your responsibility in this life. And in the labor, I don't care what your work occupation is, which you have taken under the sun, your first responsibility is to develop the love and the relationship in your marriage. So fill your love, brethren. Fill your marriage, shall I say, with these five loves that we've covered in the last two sermons. This is the most important physical responsibility and job you have because your spiritual, your eternal life depends on it. And I want you to take the things I've been saying seriously, and I want you to use them to enrich, to make much more happier and joyous the love and the relationship God has given you with your mate. And live joyfully all the days of your life with the wife of your youth. Okay, I'm going to ask Tom Fletcher to come forth and lead us in another song. Then I'll come back and talk about today's film a little bit.